From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill, and I'm joined by my co-host, Sarah Lamberson. Sarah, how's your week going so far? We are in the thick of summer, but is it summer near you? Because it's not really summer near me.
What?
Oh, is it?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, summer started about a month and a half ago.
Oh, okay.
It's been like deep in the 90s for several weeks now.
Deep in the 90s, so you got your Paula Abduls.
Yeah.
And your New Kids on the Block on the radio.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh wait, so I didn't tell you this. I had a listener, a fan of the show, message me on Instagram saying that he and his wife were traveling to Nashville over the weekend. I guess he's a big podcast fan, and he was coming for some live podcast shows of, obviously not us, because we haven't gotten to that point, but maybe someday. And he asked if I wanted to play around, and so we met up and played like 10 holes together before he and his wife did some other Nashville things.
Nice.
Yeah, it was this guy named Gabe who follows me on Instagram and seemed like a nice guy. And we talked about the show, and he's from Oklahoma City. So yeah, shout out to Gabe.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It was always
fun to meet some listeners, and we always appreciate the support. So I'm glad you got to do that. That's fun. We're not having much summer here yet in San Diego. Hopefully it'll get there eventually. As I look out at my very gray skies out the window, but that's okay, because I'm sure in a month I'll be complaining that it's too hot. So,
and it's like 8 degrees.
Oh yeah. All right. Enough rambling. Let's do the show.
Okay.
We're going to talk Ledgestone this week. That is coming up on the Disc Golf Pro Tour. And we are also going to be joined by Jenny Sanfilippo, who runs Ladies Disc Golf and is a member of the PDGA Women's Committee. Looking forward to chatting with her. And before we run down some weekend action, Sarah, I want to make a couple pieces of housekeeping. Number one, we're going to have a special edition of PDGA Radio next week, where I will be interviewing all of the board member candidates. So if you would like to learn more about those candidates before voting begins at the beginning of July, be sure to keep your eyes on your PDGA Radio podcast feed. That'll be coming out sometime next week. I do have to wrangle 6 different candidates.
There's a little bit of
cat herding going on. No, they've all actually been really great about getting back to me and getting them all in order. So
cool.
We'll be good to go, but we'll probably drop that one after next week's proper episode. So somewhere toward the end of next week, we'll have that one coming out so you can gear up before the elections. And the other announcement I wanted to make, the Disc Golfer Magazine, which if you're a PDGA member, you get with your membership 4 times a year. The magazine is looking for a new contributing editor, and basically the contributing editor is someone who's going to be one of the main content providers for the magazine. You'll be coming up with story ideas, working with the rest of the Disc Golfer staff, and writing a couple of in-depth pieces every month. So if you are a disc golfer and you have some skills and have some stories to tell, or are good at finding those stories to tell, you know, different clubs or human interest pieces, things like that about disc golf, you can email Joe Fite. He is the main man now at Disc Golfer at jfeidt@pdga.com. And that will also be up on the website shortly if you need to get a little more intel on the announcement. But yeah, we're looking for a new contributing editor. And so if you you want to throw your hat in the ring, this is a paid position as well. You can find out more about that on the website. So this is not just a, hey, do it for the exposure sort of thing. You will make some money for your talents and skills as a writer for Disc Golfer Magazine. We'd love to see you. So rest of the show. Sarah, there were a lot of A-tiers.
It's
kind of a busy weekend. We probably won't spend like too much time getting down the rabbit hole on each one, but let's run them down real quick. And you know what? Just for fun, I was going to say, let's start going west to east. I probably need to look at a map just to make sure I don't foul something up, because once you get into the middle of the country, I get a little I get a little sketchy on my geography, but at least starting over, the furthest one west that I can think of would be the Zootown Open in Missoula, Montana. What do you know about the Zootown Open, Sarah? What do the listeners need to know about that event?
It seemed like it was pretty exciting on the FPO side. I know that, well, on the MPO side, Calvin Heinberg took that down by 7 strokes. I have so many tabs open, over James Conrad. Wow. Okay. So that was, So he shot 1043, 1063, 1079.
He's pretty good.
Oh my gosh. And that was a pretty stacked field. I was going to say with all the A tiers that were this past weekend, I feel kind of bad that we just chose the two to do picks on. But
I do feel kind of bad as well because we didn't even look at Zootown and like this one was legit. It was, Calvin, James Conrad, Brian Earhart, and honestly, probably the best women's field.
I know.
I shouldn't say best, deepest. I don't mean to say, but it was, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 names that we talk about quite often on the show. So our bad Zootown Open, we still love you.
So there are 13. So speaking of FPO, there's 13 women. And I just have some insights from Paige Bjerkus's Facebook post from a few days ago. I think it was a Father's Day post slash tournament wrap up kind of thing. Shout out to her awesome dad, Doug Bjerkus. And she was saying that she started the first two rounds. She actually went 915, rated 915, 915. And I guess she texted her dad after the first round, was just really downtrodden, was like, oh, I'm playing so bad. And then she said the second round, she shot 1 stroke worse. She was like, as if it couldn't get any worse. And then he was like, you just got to shoot out of your mind, basically. And she did just that and came back from a pretty large deficit, shooting a 1026 rated final round to jump her into a tie for first place. So that is just a lesson in don't ever give up. It's not over till it's over kind of thing.
Yeah. So it ended up going into a 3-way playoff between Paige Bjerkus, Sarah Hokum, Madison Walker. From what I understand, and actually I talked briefly to Doug Bjerkus yesterday, not about that, about this, but it came up in the context. And I guess at first, like no one, because, you know, no offense to Paige, no one was expecting her to come back and shoot a 1026 rated round that would jump her up to the, you know, tied for the lead. I mean, that was a huge, huge comeback. So, basically, I think it was either a very, very close to the start or like a mad dash to get the playoff going on time to get her actually included in it. Like, I think they, from what Doug told me, they pretty much had Sarah Hokum and Madison Walker getting ready to roll. And then it was like, oh, and Paige too. And it was so, was a little bit hectic, I think.
That's understandable. I mean, as a TD, you don't really expect that kind of thing to happen, but I mean, it's just a lesson for TDs to make sure you've got all your information before doing a playoff or anything like that, especially if money's on the line. That's incredible.
It looks like a beautiful course. I'm just looking at the Zootown Open like Facebook page right now. Some really pretty photos. I thought Central Coast was going to be up there filming, and maybe they still are. Maybe they were, and it just wasn't going to be next day. I'll have to double check on that. The other thing that I really like, though, about this event, and this has happened the last couple years, is that their local newspaper, the Missoulian, legitimately sends out staff writers and photographers. And like, I'm on their website right now, Missoulian.com, and they've got like legitimate, well-written recap articles of the event with really, really good photos too. Like, it's just, it's nice to see. It warms my heart as a journalist and then a disc golfer that this event attracts the attention of the local press. I think that's really cool. And that, I think, just goes to show what the tournament has established there in town. And obviously whatever the staff is doing to continue that outreach is phenomenal. So keep it up, Zootown. Good stuff.
For sure. I'm not sure we said who actually won the 3-way tie, but that was, I'm not sure if we said that or not. My brain is mush right now, but Sarah Hokum won the 3-way tie. So congratulations to her. She played very consistently over the weekend.
Yeah, she's actually won. She has won the Zootown Open 4 times now.
Dang.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool.
So,
all right, what's the next one on the list?
Now, see, this is what I'm not sure. I need to look at a map and I need to see which one is actually further east than the other because I don't know.
Are we talking Minnesota Majestic versus Casey?
Versus Kansas City Wide Open. Wait, which one's further west? It's so close.
I think the Minnesota Majestic. I think Blue Ribbon Pines is further west. True or false?
Kansas City is more west and Minneapolis just slightly. I mean, if we're drawing it on a map, it's just slightly east. So we'll go Kansas City Wide Open.
Okay.
And surprise, surprise, Paul McBeth won that one.
Yeah.
He was playing really strongly. You can go check it out on Jomez. He shot a 1082 opening round at Waterworks, which that was a lot of fun for me to see Waterworks on Jomez. I'm a big fan of that course, even though it's not the longest. I just think it's a lot of fun. The elevation really comes into play.
Yeah.
The last two rounds are over at Wyandotte. Is that how you pronounce it?
Wyandotte?
I don't know.
Wyandotte?
County Park.
I think Wyandotte.
And,
that's what I heard.
Personally, I wasn't quite as like compelled by that course, but there were still some great shots. McBeth threw this one insane shot. I think it was was it the beginning of the back nine? Just
I don't remember which
playing the wind for this just huge shot that ended up being like a tap in eagle on like a 550 foot hole.
Yeah, and he didn't even. It wasn't even
those
like
things that only he can do.
Yeah, sorry. It wasn't even like a flat shot. It was like a flex, like a high flex backhand turnover shot.
Yeah.
It was insane.
Yeah. So he took that one by, gosh, how many strokes?
Eight strokes.
So a lot. Cameron Messerschmidt came in second, Chris Clemens in third, Nathan Queen in fourth, Andrew Presnell rounding out the top five. And then over on the women's side, it was actually pretty close battle. Misty Gannon ended up taking the win by 3 over Hannah McBeth.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit closer battle, I think, than we get accustomed to sometimes on the women's side. So good stuff there. And you know, Missy built up a little bit of a lead and was able to lean on that. She shot one shot less than, one shot more obviously than Hannah, the final round. You know, and I know we've talked about Hannah in the context of being a listener of the program, but she has very quietly gotten her rating up to 917.
Yeah, we used to be, actually me, Missy, and Hannah used to be rated around all the same, around 905, 910, and now I got some work to do.
Thanks, that guys. Is true. Get on it.
I know. The other takeaway that I had, McBeth had one bogey the entire weekend, which I guess isn't super shocking for him, but Waterworks for me, I've not played that course, and like you said, I think it was really exciting to watch on footage, just some of the basket positions are so difficult, and just having having that skill to know disc selection and then speed control for your drives, your approach shots, even your putts was, I mean, that course takes a lot of skill, but of course McBeth made it look simple.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he is.
I feel like we just say it so mundanely now, and like this is never to discredit Paul and the amazing things he does. Like it's just, it's almost more shocking now when he doesn't play well, which that's probably not fair to him if we're being honest. But
he has set the standard.
No, he has, and it is still fun to watch. It's gonna be fun to see what he has in store this weekend at Ledgestone. All right, and then the last bigger A tier of the weekend, we had the Minnesota Majestic with two rounds of 27 at Blue Ribbon Pines, which Nate Sexton famously called soft a couple years back.
Oh yeah. I totally forgot about that.
I don't think it is though. There's lots of trees. That one's on my bucket list. I haven't been able to go up there before, but that's,
I haven't either.
The whole Minnesota area is on my bucket list for disc golf. And, so we had Mr. Kevin Jones took this one down, on the MPO side. And then on the FPO side, Rebecca Cox, which I think, was this her first big A tier win?
I believe I saw that it was her first A tier win of the year, and
I think
her second A tier win in her career.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Congratulations to both of them. Kevin Jones, getting super hot on with the putter, it looks like.
Yes.
And also apparently I saw Matt Bell mentioned on his social media that he got a little nutty with the putter, and I'm looking at U-Disc right now for round two. 110 footer, 74 footer, 49 footer, 60.
Wow.
And he was doing some putts. That should be coming out on ParSafe Productions.
Oh yeah, I'm excited to watch soon. That. Yeah. Yeah, Kevin Jones had 61% birdies.
It's a lot of birdies.
That's so many birdies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's on the come up. Kind of cool. I like seeing how people kind of recover from a big event like Beaver State going into the weekend. And so you had Calvin Heimberg, who, you know, did pretty well, got on the lead card and then kind of faltered off. He rebounds with a win. Kevin Jones, he was up there for a little bit as well. I think he was on chase card and then ended up, I think, tied for 11th. If I recall correctly, and you know, rebounds with the win as well. So just I think that says a lot about some of these younger players to see how they recover from the bigger events and some possible disappointments that they bounce back in the fashion they do. So
yeah,
I like seeing that.
While we're talking about these A tiers, we might as well go over our picks for the weekend.
Yeah, and then we'll do some hot rounds. What were the picks? I think you smashed me.
Yeah, but I think it's only like I got to choose first. So, and the divisions were a little bit smaller, so it definitely worked to my advantage. All right. For the Majestic, I chose Rebecca Cox to win, so I got two for that. You chose Ellen, you got zero. You chose Kale to win. Yeah. He did not win. And then I chose Matt Oram to win on the MPO side, so I got zero for that. So I got two overall.
I was at least close with Kale.
Yeah. And then on the Casey Wide Open, you picked Hannah Macbeth and Presnell to win, so you got zeros for those, and then I got 2 points for Missy Gannon winning and Paul Macbeth winning. So,
I have a big lead.
Yeah, I have 33 points. You have a mere 25.
I'm putting the season under protest. It's under protest. You racked up points on a fluky week.
Sorry, you get to pick first.
It's under protest. Yeah, I do, and I am excited about that. But before we get into this week, let's talk about last week still. Let's go over the hot rounds. Sarah, would you like to start us on the FPO side?
I sure would. All right. The fifth hottest rated round. So these came from a lot of different events, besides some that we just talked about. Sayananda shot a 977 rated second round at the Twin Falls Classic sponsored by Dynamic Discs and Latitude 64, and that was in Twin Falls, Idaho, and she took the win in that event by quite a few strokes. Wow, 14 strokes. So congratulations to Sai. The fourth hottest rated round, Madison Walker shot a 980 at the Zootown Open, and that was her second round, and she finished tied for second with Paige Bjerkus. The next hottest rated round was Michelle Frazier. Glad to see her name on the list.
Yeah,
she's a great player. She shot a 984 at the King of the Woods, driven by Innova, and that was during...
More like Queen of the Woods.
Queen of the Woods, haha. And that was her first round. She actually played against her sister. It was a two-woman race, and she beat her sister by 16 strokes. Wow. And that was in Voorhees Township, New Jersey. So congratulations to Michelle Frazier. Next was Nicole Russell, and she played in the Bittersweet Summer Opener. And this was another, we've just been seeing 1,000 rated rounds, like it's the usual for the women, which is really awesome. And she played... And yes, Bittersweet Summer Opener. She shot the 1,004 her first round and finished in first place, shooting 2 under for the weekend in a field of 7. So awesome job. Congratulations, Nicole. And the hottest round we talked about already was Paige Bjerkus shooting the 1026 at the Zootown Open, and she ended up in a tie for second. Amazing.
Very nice. That was the second highest rated round of her career, coming in behind her 1028 at Pro Worlds last year. Yeah. So pretty solid.
Yes.
I have a feeling we're going to end up seeing a lot more 1,000 plus rated rounds in Paige Bjerkus' career.
I think so too.
All right. on the MPO side, we are kicking it off with Kevin Sheehan at the Zootown Open. He shot a 1070 rated final round, and that bumped him up to a tie for 10th place. So congratulations, Kevin. Jumping over to the Myrtle Beach Open presented by Discraft, Stephen Miller shot a 1070 rated second round. He ended up winning that event by 16 strokes. I'm seeing a significant name here. Austin Turner was back playing over at this event. So I'm happy to see that. Hopefully, yeah. I know he's been battling some injuries. So hopefully this means he's on the mend and will be getting back into the swing of things. So with a 1072 rated opening round, Kevin Jones ended up winning the Majestic. Paul McBeth's 1082 rated opening round over at Waterworks during the Kansas City Wide Open was the second hottest rated round. And that leaves us with Sias Elmore's second round at the 25th anniversary Frying Pan presented by Visit Stockton, a Steady Ed Tour and NorCal series event up in Stockton, California. 1088 rated second round for Sias Elmore. He was the hottest rated round of the week, and he won that event by 7 strokes. So
also that
congratulations to everyone on the hot rounds list this week.
I was going to say that.
I'm excited to see who's going to be on the hot rounds next week.
Oops, my bad. I was going to say that also wins the best name for the events of this week.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. All right, let's take a break, and we are going to be joined by Jenny Sanfilippo, and then when we come back, we will talk Ledgestone Insurance Open. So we'll be back here in just a moment on PDJ Radio.
I am super excited to introduce our guest on this week's podcast. It is Jenny Sanfilippo. She's the owner of Ladies First Disc Golf and does a lot of other stuff for the women's disc golf community. Hey, Jenny, how are you doing today?
I am doing really good. It's nice weather here finally in Wisconsin, and I'm happy to be here, part of your podcast. So yeah, thanks for having me.
Sure. So what, we know each other a little bit, but there's some things that as I was trying to prepare some questions for you, I was like, I don't even really know this kind of stuff about her. Can you tell us what your origin story is for disc golf, how you got into the sport?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So my husband and I, he's the one who introduced me to disc golf. We started dating in the end, like fall of 2007. He's a landscaper. I worked at a garden center. That's how we met. So we both like outdoors, trees, dogs, those three things. And he was a very casual disc golfer. I think he had two discs. I don't even remember what the first disc I used was, but it was one of those discs. So when we were first dating, we would take the dogs to parks and play disc golf. And the first 6 months, I was very casual disc golfer and not very good. I could not throw it very far. It was, kind of a struggle a lot of the times out there. But I kind of managed after a while to start throwing a little bit flatter and a little bit further, and then I got hooked. Like about a year later, I got totally hooked and started playing disc golf. We realized we could play in winter. We went out in a snowstorm and we're like, oh my goodness, we can do this all year round. This is the best thing ever. And then this was like right at the height of Facebook kind of becoming available to everyone. I think this is how we found out about the Western Lakes Open, which was ran by Terry Miller. Awesome. And it was on a temp course at a ball golf course. And it's the only time a tournament has ever been ran there. And that was the first tournament we signed up for. I didn't have a mini. I didn't know anything, but went to that tournament and had that normal like tournament anxiety, but also that excitement of like, oh, this was so fun. Like the competition was just, you know, on the edge of your seat. So that's kind of how I started as a casual player, because I like being outside and wanted to go to the park with my dogs, and then just learn more about the organized portion of it. And, you know, like most of us got hooked. So
I love it. I can totally relate.
Yeah.
So now you've kind of taken your love of the sport and you actually have Ladies First Disc Golf, an online retail shop, which I hear you just had your 1000th order placed this week. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was looking at the stats and I was adding them all up, and it's at actually 1,005 And that's just through my website. So I think it's actually more than that, because sometimes I do pre-orders through like Google Forms or other form services that don't come in directly through the website. And also for the last couple of years, I've gone down to the Glassblown Open and vended a couple women's tournaments. So probably served more than that number of orders, but definitely for the website, yeah, just 1,005 as of this week. So I was so excited.
Yeah, that's super exciting. What was the vision, you know, behind this website? Was it something that you saw a need for, or was it just something that you wanted to do?
Kind of both. So I definitely saw a need for it, because I, since 2013, have been working with ladies in Wisconsin and surrounding states to run the Discon Ladies League. We have leagues throughout the state. So I've been interacting with a lot of women disc golfers, and I just kind of saw that, you know, things that people were throwing, like ladies coming to league and they were like, oh yeah, my boyfriend gave me this like beat up, you know, destroyer, and it's like totally not flying well for them. And I was like, you know, women need a resource, a place that they can go, like a website that they can go to purchase discs that are going to have a much better chance of working for them. And then even, you know, people who have been playing for a couple of years, like I know for myself, I throw a lot of light discs. I throw a lot of understable discs. And when I go online or even to a local vendor, it's like I am not always finding a good selection of those discs. So that was the first like kind of need for it, where it was just making the process of buying discs for women that are suited to women's skill levels better, you know, better process. And then I also have an e-commerce background because I sell flower bulbs online. So I've been doing that since 2010. So I kind of know all the aspects of like creating products and, you know, some marketing and customer service. So I combined my e-commerce background from gardening with my love for disc golf and wanting more women disc golfers to play and to continue playing. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
What's the top selling product? Are you allowed to tell us? Is that trade secrets?
Well, I guess for discs, I would say probably the Latitude 64 Diamond is the disc that I have sold the most of and reordered the most of. It could be because I love that disc and I probably push it a lot to people. But it also is a very like user-friendly disc for, you know, definitely for most women. I do know some women who, you know, kind of throw with more power in it. They just can't throw it because they don't have the finesse. But a lot of women, it's a game changer. But the products that I actually sell most of are apparel, which when I started the business, my intention was not really to be an apparel company. I wanted to have a place where people could buy discs, but then have some apparel. And I ended up buying a heat press and I started making clothing. And then it's just kind of snowballed from there. And I just keep on finding more products that women disc golfers love and need in their life. So
Jen is totally bringing back the fanny pack, by the way.
I actually could go on and on about fanny packs for longer than this podcast would allow, but they come in handy at the dog park too, because I can carry my keys and my phone. And yeah, so they're like definitely multi-use, but definitely on the disc golf course. I've brought it out there before, and I hook it up to my Zooka cart too. Ooh. I don't have a couch, yeah. So I put all my belongings in there, and then I don't have to worry about losing my keys or my phone. So fanny packs aren't just for the 90s. They're for today.
They're definitely coming back. Okay. Tina Oakley was sporting one out at Beaver State.
I think I saw that picture today on the PDJ Flickr page. I was like, she wearing a fanny pack?
Yep, she was for sure.
I wear mine with pride. It's amazing.
Oh, me too. Absolutely. There is no shame in the fanny pack game.
No. So you are also on the PDGA Women's Committee. Can you tell us a little bit about that and your role, and maybe give us some insight on what you guys are working on this year?
Yeah, so I've been on the Women's Committee since 2014, and it's been exciting. When we first had our meetings, we were just doing like teleconferences on the phone. And then a year later, we started using Google Hangouts. So our meetings, because everyone is from, you know, the whole United States, are really nice because you can actually see people in person. So it's, you know, the committee has definitely evolved over the years. This year, since it's not a women's global event year, we kind of have a little bit more freedom to work on other projects. So I know as of, you know, the last couple of weeks, we're kind of reforming the social media efforts on the PDGA Women's Committee. We just had, I just had a meeting last night with a couple of the ladies who are on the committee. So you will probably see a lot more activity on the PDGA Women's Facebook page, as well as the Instagram, the PDGA Women Instagram account. So I know we're going to be doing some things to get more ladies leagues and tournaments involved and whatnot. And then, so that's kind of our plan for the summer. And then for coming up for 2020, that will be a women's global event year. So that takes a lot of our focus because it is a big event to coordinate, you know, to work with all the sponsors and everything. So, so yeah, in the past I've been the secretary and note taker. So I do sometimes still take notes, but I'm just a committee member and primarily focused on helping with the social media efforts.
And now it sounds like you run a lot of events, right?
I do. So I run a ladies league in Milwaukee, and actually the Discon Ladies League, we have several leagues throughout the region. So we have a league in Madison, in northern Wisconsin, in Wausau. We have a league in Rockford, Illinois, a league in Quad Cities, Iowa. We have two leagues in Michigan. So they're pretty casual leagues, and they're, you know, we definitely are very beginner focused with these leagues. But we also, the Dolls run, which I'm the tournament director for, the Wisco Disco, which is part of the Midwest Women's Tour, and it is next weekend, June 29th. So we've been sold out with 80 players since the end of April, which was exciting. We had like 15 or 20 spots left. I was driving home from the Glassblown Open and had 15 or 20 spots. And Christina, who's part of our committee, had posted on Facebook 15 spots left. And I had a chance to take a break from driving and was looking at my phone at the registrations coming in like 1 minute. And then I'm like, oh, another registration. So it just was rapid fire selling out. So this is our sixth year for the Wisco Disco, and it's definitely becoming, you know, a tournament that's on a lot of people's list of must play events for women's events. So that, and then I also run a tournament in fall for ladies first disc golf called the Sparkle Open, and that's just a fun event on a very beginner friendly, women's friendly course, and also a women's global event every other year. I work with the Dolls to run that down at Gray Fox, which is in southern Wisconsin.
Okay, I have two follow-up questions for you.
One,
do you think that the Women's Global will ever go annual?
There has been talk about it on the committee. And I think it all comes down to, it all comes down to getting these companies to sponsor. It would be a lot more to ask of them to sponsor the players' packs and everything yearly than, you know, doing it every other year. It's a bit easier for us to attain those sponsors and keep them happy. So there's been talk about it. If, you know, we continue on with a virtual player pack like we did in 2018, which kind of had mixed reviews, but if we continue on with that, I think that it would be a little bit more attainable to do it yearly. So I can't say for sure. I can't say yes or no either way, but that we definitely have discussed it.
Nice. I really enjoy those events. I've played as many as I possibly can. So it's really awesome.
I think there's just something special knowing that like you're making a putt or throwing a drive at the same time as so many, potentially at the same time as so many other women in the world.
Yeah.
It's just this like crazy, awesome feeling.
For sure. So my second question was, you're obviously really successful when it comes to getting women together, getting beginners interested in leagues. Can you share some of your secrets? Because obviously that's, as you know, that's something that all of us kind of struggle with across the country, probably across the world, to get more women interested in the sport.
Yeah. So, I mean, at leagues, I know one thing that is really helpful is if we see a lady on the course playing, and I know other people do this, we will give them our contact information and talk to them and let them know, like, I mean, the one thing about our league, and so some people might not, we're very casual. We do keep score, but it's kind of for our own personal knowledge, not necessarily for a leaderboard or anything like that. So, you know, we let people know that, like, it's very casual. It's for anyone. You know, we've had people who have never played before come to the league, and, you know, it's free to play. I think that's really enticing. So that for a league is definitely helpful, is just making it a welcoming and non-intimidating environment for people. And then as far as tournaments and things like that, I think a lot of it started with like social media. You know, a few years ago, I started creating Facebook groups to before groups were really big. I started creating like different groups, like the Upper Midwest Women's Disc Golf. I don't even know if it's still a group anymore, but that's the first group I started with, was trying to connect women from that, like, oh, I know this person and this person knows this person, but not everyone knows each other. But if we're all in the same group and, you know, we can post something like, hey, I'm playing this tournament, who wants to play? We can all get connected better. I also am fortunate that I have a lot of support from other women in this region who do a lot for disc golf, and they kind of help bring the ladies. So really it's all about working with each other and connecting. I think that's huge to, you know, grow the women's side of the sport, is if you know a couple people and they know a couple people and you all kind of talk and make a plan, you can make that group go from 2 or 3 people to 10 people. So
that's awesome. I'm sure that listeners, male and female, will be able to take some of those suggestions and use them locally. I know we've see the struggles here in Nashville for sure, but every year it seems like we've got a couple more women that are interested in playing with us. So,
yeah, one other suggestion that we actually, the Dolls just ran a doubles tournament this winter, and I know you run a big doubles tournament, mixed doubles tournament, so yeah, you know all about that action. But that, I think, is huge for as far as, like, introducing women to the tournament scene, because they're generally going to be with someone that they're comfortable with in that environment before they go out on their own. So if you already have a league or a tournament and that you run and you're trying to get more people to it, maybe consider doing, like, a fundraiser mixed doubles event, because I feel like it's easier to get attendance for those.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember hearing the past couple of years, there's women that were like, you know, your doubles event last year was my first ever PDGA event, and now, you know, I played 6 since then, and I look forward to your event. And it's because they were able to come out with their husband or boyfriend and get comfortable, mm-hmm, and know that there's other women on the course that are in the same kind of skill set as they are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a really good point. Last question. Here's the heavy hitter. When you do have time to play, what are your go-to courses? What's your favorite courses around your area?
When I do have time to play 18 holes without dogs, yep, my favorite course in Milwaukee is Brown Deer Park, because I love wooded courses. I do not throw very far. I am definitely, I've been told, I'm very graceful, but I don't have a lot of power. So I prefer the technical courses because I have an easier time keeping it in the fairway. So I can, you know, keep up with players that maybe can throw further than me, but, you know, so Brown Deer, it's fairly wooded and I really enjoy that. It's got nice scenery too. It's kind of got like an old Milwaukee school to it. Old Milwaukee vibe to it. I knew I was going to say something weird.
Oh, I say 10 things weird every episode. We're good.
Yeah. And then my favorite course when I have my dogs is probably Heritage Trails. It's just a 9-hole course. It's like 20 minutes away. And we take our dogs there all the time because they need to run. So they're important. They're important to me. So I gotta give them a shout out.
Roscoe and what's your other dog's name?
Ellie,
that's right. Roscoe and Ellie. They're adorable. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm really excited. I'm a big supporter of Ladies First Disc Golf. I want to make a little plug for you. Just if you are a female out there playing and looking for discs or awesome apparel, or if you're a guy out there wanting to get your wife or girlfriend or friend into disc golf, please check out ladiesfirstdiscgolf.com and see what you can do to support Jenny and her business.
Or if you just want to support, man, I'd go get any of these discs with any of these stamps on it.
Yeah, for sure.
It'd be great.
Well, thank you, Steve and Sarah. That's really nice. I mean, I do sell some guy shirts, some unisex shirts that really soft and everyone seems to really like them. So there are some options if you're a guy out there and you just want to support women's disc golf but don't have a woman in your life yet.
Yeah. Awesome. Or you just want to sport a sweet tank top with a ruffle on the back. Like
exactly.
Yes.
All right, Jenny, thanks for coming on. We appreciate the time.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Of course, that was Jenny Sanfilippo with Ladies First Disc Golf, and we'll be back here on PDJ Radio in just a moment. Thank you again to Jenny Sanfilippo for coming on. Sarah, that to me was a very inspiring interview, just to hear someone who, and this kind of runs along a lot of disc golfer stories, but like, especially someone on the women's side who just got hooked on the sport and has done so much with it. You know, all the leagues she was talking about that she's running and getting more women in the sport is super cool. So again, her website is ladiesfirstdiscgolf.com, and you can go over there and support her and, you know, helping get more women into the sport.
Yeah, that was amazing talking to her. I already, for me, just moving around to different places and being involved in different clubs, it is really hard to get women into the sport, and knowing that you can do it with such a grassroots effort and just a little bit of networking and word of mouth, and coming so far as she has is really motivational.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right, Sarah, that leaves us with time to talk about the Ledgestone Insurance Open, this weekend's Disc Golf Pro Tour event. This would be the, this is the sixth event on the Pro Tour already? Wow.
Yeah.
I guess we are kind of into the swing of things this year. Perennially one of the bigger events on tour, with a big payout and lots of competitors on both the Open and AM sides. This takes place in Peoria, Illinois. And Sarah, I know we'll talk about the competitors and everything like that, but I want to talk about this event in the context of Pro Worlds. This is the same city and tournament director for Pro Worlds this year. Now at Pro Worlds, the men will play Eureka like they're playing this weekend, and the women will play Sunset Hills like they're playing this weekend. But each division will also play Northwoods, a more wooded venue that neither of those fields is playing this weekend. So the way I look at it is, this is kind of like a 60% warm up for Pro Worlds in 2 months, because you've got three rounds at each of these courses, which is, I think, what they're playing for Pro Worlds too.
That's that's kind of the reason I'm going, is I figured when I get to Worlds, I only have a few days to check out the courses, and if I can get comfortable with one of them while I'm at Ledgestone and kind of focus on Northwoods when I get up there for Pro Worlds, I'd rather do that. So it seems like most of the women who are on tour full time have probably played both courses and are somewhat comfortable. It's in a pretty, I would say, pretty accessible place in the country, where you might be passing through and playing the courses, as opposed to maybe like Smuggler's Notch in Vermont last year. Like that's one of those courses that like I probably wouldn't go up there, or it would be difficult for me to go up there.
It's definitely a field trip.
Yeah. But Ledgestone is, I would say, is pretty close to the middle of the country, and people are coming and going, and I think it's accessible for a lot more players. So I'm assuming that people have a lot more experience on these courses than they might at a Smuggler's Notch or something similar to that.
That's a good point. I hadn't really thought about that.
Yeah. It's about a 7-hour drive for me, which is, it's kind of far, but I'm willing to do it if I can get some practice in for Worlds and also just play another big event with all the best women in the country.
Yeah, now I don't see tee times or anything up yet, so yeah. I'll be curious to see who you get paired up with round one.
Me
but
too.
I'll be rooting for you. I'll be following you on UDisc Live, which is where everybody can follow this event, as well as on the Disc Golf Pro Tour's YouTube channel, and then their various media outposts like Roku and Disc Golf Network, DGPT.TV, and you can go over to DGPT.com and find all the info, because honestly, they've so many outposts for the live coverage now. And then for post-production, you're going to have Jomez on MPO Lead, Central Coast on MPO Chase, and GK Pro on FPO Lead, all coming with next day. Now, GK Pro, if you're not familiar with them, I believe they're a newer company out of Oklahoma, I'm pretty sure. And they've put out some pretty solid round coverage. So I would recommend you going to look over that. I think maybe on YouTube you might have to type in GK Productions. I'm not 100% on that. But that'll be good. It's more post-production for the people who want to watch it in that format, more live coverage for the people who want to watch it unfold live. And this is Friday through Sunday. And Sarah, what's like you said, you're playing Sunset Hills, so obviously you're doing a little recon. I know you're watching some of the video. What can we really be expecting in your estimation? You know, what are the big takeaways for you for this course?
So I know there's some people who like to hate on golf courses, but this is one of those golf courses where you have to have a lot of accuracy, not just throw it as hard as you possibly can and then hope that it gets close to the basket or hope that you have an open approach shot. There are hazard bunkers close to pins. On the front nine, there's at least three holes that you're throwing over or near water. For a golf course, I think there's actually a lot of trees to get around. So that's pretty interesting to me. It's not just, like I said, just like a throw 300 to 400 feet and hope to have an open approach shot. I think there are a lot of obstacles than you would normally have on a golf course. And of course, there are cart paths and golf greens and all of that stuff that we're used to seeing. But there's also a good bit of elevation change. And I think for the women's tees, there's a good amount of score separation. Like is it hole three that throws through a little tunnel over water? And I was just watching some of the coverage from last year, and it's kind of like a two or a four hole. Like you either get on the green and get your two, or you're going out of bounds and taking it from the drop zone and getting your four. So I think it'll be an exciting course for score separation. And I don't know, going into it, I don't have a clear winner in my head. Jessica Weiss won this last year. And she's got a lot of variety in her shots, forehand, backhand. And I think it kind of is like anybody's game on this course.
Yeah, and look, I think as much as, like you're saying, it kind of, you know, people kind of like to rag on golf courses sometimes, but like I played on a course that sounds very similar to this over the weekend. We have a new course in the San Diego area that is on a ball golf course, and a lot of the treachery comes from the bunkers and the greens near the pin, and I don't know, I kind of liked it as a different challenge. Like, yeah, there aren't trees, and you're not shaping lines as much, but man, it's still like, you got to be really confident in that angle that you're releasing on. And you have to be really confident in how much power you're putting on something. So I think it's a different challenge. And I had fun playing it. I don't know. Maybe it's because I don't play golf courses too often, but I don't know. I think it's good to have a different type of challenge like that. And then I guess over on the MPO side, if you want to talk about challenge, good Lord, the Lake Eureka temporary course is, I think, one of the just, I mean, it's a really difficult course. Tons of rope, OB, there's water. I think this course boasts one of the highest OB rates on tour, if not the highest.
I could see that.
OB rate on tour, maybe between it's got to be pretty close between this and USDGC. And I know that's kind of the style that they're trying to emulate, but Yeah, lots of OB and 9,600 feet, par 63. You might get the occasional ace, which is nice. You've got a couple of shorter holes that you can do that. You have a couple of little signature holes like the, there's the water tower hole. There's even the opening hole where it kind of plays over toward a dam that slopes down is really tricky. You've got the bridge hole that plays to an island. We saw AJ Risley kind of meet his demise on that hole last year. There were 616 OBs.
Wow.
During round four.
Oh my gosh. I think I remember us talking about
that. That's just during round four.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm pretty excited that I'm not playing.
It's OB City.
Yeah. I'm pretty excited I'm not playing that course.
Yeah, and so really that's what I'm looking for this weekend is I'm not looking for a bomber, even though Macbeth has won this event. I'm looking for a player like who won last year, Nate Sexton.
I was gonna say.
Someone who can be a little more, take the foot off the gas, be a little more conservative. The only thing about that is that player this year won't be Nate Sexton because he is not playing the event. So kind of a bummer that he's not going to be there to defend his title. But I think it kind of leaves the door open for a lot of people. I mean, I think Josh Anthon won the year before that. He's playing this year. You've got some more concern. You need someone who can be a conservative player, but also has enough distance. And I think that's I've got my eyes on some names, Sarah. Ooh. So I'm actually kind of excited.
Okay.
I'm excited that I get to pick first this week.
Okay. Well, we didn't go over the course stats real fast. So Lake Eureka is par 63, over 9,600 feet. I almost said square feet. I'm deep into house construction stuff.
It's a decently sized house.
Yeah. And then Sunset Hills, where the women will be playing, is a par 60, just over 7,000 feet.
Yeah.
Oh, and the projected payout is $81,565. And I would say it's a little bit deeper of a payout than normal. They're paying out 81 of 180 MPO and 29 of 46 FPO. So that.
All right. So you got to get 29th or better, Sarah.
Yeah. That's the goal. I'd love to get some cash money.
There you go. That'd be great. That'll be fun to talk about on next week's episode. Yeah. If you do get some cash money. All right. So without further ado, picks times, I'm going to go first because it is my turn. And also I need a win or two. So I'm going to start on the FPO side. And when I think of this course, like we're talking, well, I mean, granted, now I'm over at Sunset, it's a little different ballgame. But the people who've won the last couple of years haven't necessarily been the big bombers. They don't necessarily need to be over there, but I think I want someone who has a lot of different shots, can kind of stay within herself, and is also the highest rated player on the women's side of the sport. So give me Katrina Allen. I think Katrina's in for a rebound week after Beaver State.
You totally took mine.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. Hannah Macbeth isn't playing. Interesting. All right, let's see here. Well, I think I'm going to go Sarah Hokum. She's a pretty conservative player, and she's got all the variety of the shots in the bag, and coming off of a win, I think she's got a little extra confidence probably. And she needs a bigger win, I think, this year. So I'm feeling good about that. And she's a Sarah. So
all right.
That gives her extra style points.
And she's a Sarah.
Yeah.
That works. I will then take Paige Pierce top five.
Okay. I know you're going to do that. No surprise there. Okay. Oh, well, then I'm going to take the other Paige for the top five, Paige Bjerkus. She's been playing well.
I think that's a solid choice.
Yeah.
And especially, ropes and strength, she can handle it. She's known for a little more accuracy. So I think that's a good, A good pick. All right, over on the MPO side, I know I'm sitting here talking like, oh, I want a conservative player, and I want someone who can keep it in bounds and blah, 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 but you don't mess with Paul McBeth right now, so I'm going to go with Paul McBeth. All right.
I'm going to not keep it interesting, and I'm going to go Ricky. He needs a win. He needs...
I mean, it hasn't been that long, has it?
He won the San Francisco Open, and won Texas State Disc Golf Championships.
Yeah.
He needs another win.
I like parody. I like that we're classifying Ricky as needing a win. I think that's a good thing. I think that's a great thing. All right, so top five, coming off of Beaver State and Zootown, I really like Calvin Heimberg in this spot. I think this course plays well to his strengths of long distance pinpoint accuracy. So give me some Calvin Heimberg, top five.
I like it. So James Conrad has been in the mix for the past several events, but he hasn't been able to seal the deal. So I'm liking him for top five.
Ooh, all right.
I don't think I've chosen him yet this year.
All right. Well, again, you can keep up with all the action. It is Friday through Sunday over at the Disc Golf Pro Tour's YouTube channel for the live coverage. And then Jomez, Central Coast, and GK Pro for post-production, UDisc Live, and all that good stuff on for the Ledgestone Insurance Open. So going to be an exciting one. Sarah, I think that does it because you actually need to get on the road for Ledgestone. So please travel safely. I know the weather, which we didn't really talk about, the weather has been a little bit dicey. I saw Infinite Discs was driving out there and they posted on their Twitter feed like a rainstorm.
Great.
So let's...
Actually, I have a plug before we end because that's what I do.
Because always.
Okay, so last week I talked about the fundraiser discs that I was selling for the Junior Girl sponsorship going to Junior Worlds, and that is in a couple weeks in Emporia, Kansas. Yes. And I have finally chosen some winners. It was a very, very difficult decision because I got about 10 submissions. And like, how are
you? And you chose all 10.
Yes, actually, I think I kind of did. I chose a first, second, and third.
Yay.
I chose first, second, and third, and then emailed everyone else and was like, but I'm going to send all of you some spending money, too. With that said, I still have about, I want to say, 25 or 30 fundraiser discs that I'm trying to get rid of. I'm taking a loss on this because I just want to send as much money to these families as possible. I know as someone who goes to these events, I know it's really expensive, especially if you're taking multiple daughters or family members out there. So if we could put the link to the discs in the show notes again, and I would really appreciate you guys considering buying one, but I also want to announce the winners. So I'll start with third place. That's what we like to do on the show. So my third place winner was Allison Menchaca. I hope I said your name right, from Modesto, California. She's 10 years old. And she will be playing Junior World. So she wins third place. And I have not told them how much money I'm sending them yet because it all depends on how many discs I sell before Junior World starts. So the more discs I sell, the more money I can send them. Congratulations, Allison. And then the second place winner was Kelsey Pop. She is from Perryville, Missouri, and she is 14 years old. And both of those girls said that they had never really played with anyone their age before. No girls their age before. So they're really looking forward to traveling to Worlds and playing with an entire division of girls. So that was like the one thing that they wrote that I was like, oh man, come on. They deserve to play with people their own age. And the first place winners was a family that has three daughters that are all going. I was like, man, that's going to be expensive for this family. So, and that is the Castruita family. I'm sorry if I messed up your name. But it's Melody, who's 15, Aria, who's 13, and Haley, who is 11. And they are from Spicewood, Texas.
Very cool.
Yeah. So click the link, buy some discs, help the girls.
Say, you can say the URL too.
Oh, well, it's on so I used to make and sell bow ties called Lambo Ties. So it's on my Lambo Ties website. I don't have the URL handy. Here, talk for a second and I'll grab it.
It's just lamboties.com, isn't
it? It's lamboties.com, but the page is kind of hidden since it's okay.
Oh, well, you should put that right on the front page.
lamboties.com/2019-Sarah-Lamberson-fundraiser-discs. That's why I didn't want to say it out loud because it's kind of long. But no, it's also all over my Facebook page, all over my Instagram page, and hopefully Steve will be nice enough to put it in the show notes this week as well.
Hey, I did it last time. Of course I'll
thank
do
you.
It this time.
And it's so, the discs are featuring my adorable dogs.
Oh, even better. And thank you to everyone who has contributed already. Yes. You are helping to get some deserving families to Junior World. So very cool to see people pitch in for that. And thank you, Sarah, for contributing. One more thing before we go, Sarah. I've decided that if we were to go back in a time machine and we were putting like your quote in the yearbook, you know how you get to put your quote in the yearbook?
Yeah.
Yeah, yours would be, sorry if I messed up your name.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't disagree with
that. That's how we're going to end the show this week. We're going to work on Sarah's, we'll get Sarah a pronunciation key. And I don't know. After that, we'll hope that we can get it. Hey, names are tough. It's okay.
And I don't want to mess up your name. So even if I'm like 99% confident I said it correctly, I still want to put the little disclaimer. Like,
it's that 1%.
Yeah.
It's all in good fun, yeah. Sarah. I kid because I love. But no, it's hard, man. You always seem to get the tougher names than I do. Just wait till we get toward European Open time and we're going to be that'll be on me. I'll have to learn some names while we're over there.
I can just type it into Google and then just do the little, like it could just say the name for me.
Yeah, just hold your phone up to the microphone.
I would rather do that. And then at least I'm not taking the fall for pronouncing people's names wrong.
Yeah, we can do that. That'll work. All right. So thank you again for listening to this episode of PDGA Radio. You can send us some feedback, radio@pdga.com. Give us a review, share with your friends, subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. And we will catch you next week. Sarah, have fun at Ledgestone.
Thank you.
All right. So for Sarah Lamberson, I'm Steve Hill, and that was PDGA Radio. Be good to each other, and we'll talk to you next week.